Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
G'day, mate. I'm Matthew Cause. But right now, oi, I'm in New Zealand. So this is a emergency evergreen podcast with our first ever guest, Bob. We got our first guest here.
It's very exciting, man. By the way, was that really a New Zealand accent?
Yes, it was.
It sounded kind of Aussie.
I'm here in New Zealand with my boomerang. Right, some more kangaroo to fight.
Drinking a Foster's.
That's right.
Some more kangaroo to fight. Oh, what do the kangaroo do? They're pretty harmless.
They're mean.
Actually, and they box. Yeah, that's true. Exactly. It's a good point. You're right. Exactly. Matt, who am I to question you?
You know why, Bob?
You're there.
Yes, I'm there right now. Do you know why these kangaroo are angry at me? I didn't share some of the shrimp on the barbie, which is what they do in New Zealand.
Quite possibly the worst person ever, Matt. Okay, so let's dive right in. We're going to do today, because Matt's in New Zealand, but not really, so we're taping this last week. We're going to preview the upcoming leaf season.
Yes.
But we're not going to just preview it. We're going to preview the questions that everyone's going to ask in their previews.
Yes.
So this is the Macko and Cause podcast preview. Of the upcoming leaf season.
Yes.
Yeah. Because we don't like, don't do what Donnie Don't does, as they once said in The Simpsons. Okay, so shall we, our big guest today.
Our first guest. Ever guest on the Macko and Cause podcast. It is from The Athletic, Jonas Siegel. Jonas, how you doing, buddy?
I'm pretty good. I'm going to ask you, did you ever watch the show Flight of the Conchords?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, well, that's New Zealand. They were from New Zealand, but they lived in New York.
Yeah, I know. Listen,
so you should watch that show while you're there.
Yeah.
Kind of get into it.
I think you heard my introduction. I'm going to get to Flight of the Conchord, but first I've got to watch all the Crocodile Dundee movies and to get me in the mood of New Zealand.
I think that's Australia.
I don't think you're right, but I don't want to argue with you as your first guest. Priscilla, Queen
Matt,
of the Desert.
I got to go pretty quick, so I don't know what part of you is going to like beat this New Zealand joke to death, but... How about the part that doesn't exist in you?
All right, why don't you ask the first preview question?
The first preview, because we're asking the questions that are going to be asked once everybody starts up. All right, Jonas, really, my biggest question right now for the leaf season is, see, Matt and I have, in many areas, kind of different ways of looking at stuff. Matt's super excited about the kids, and yes. I can't blame him for that, because why wouldn't he be? They're amazing, right? But I think you tend to paper over, maybe willfully, some of the holes that still exist.
I accept that they're there.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how optimistic are you that the Leafs will do better next year than they did last year?
So this is a 1 to 10? Mm-hmm. 7? In that ballpark? I think there's...
Good answer.
If you're looking at like question marks for the season, I think one, to me, big one. And I've been thinking about like a potential story to work on. The most important Leaf... And I don't think it's any of the people that might come to mind. It's not Austin Matthews. It's not William Nylander.
You're going to hipster pick, aren't you?
No,
it's Frederick Anderson. Because if Frederick Anderson can't be an average to above average goaltender like he was last year, he was really inconsistent. I think that's going to be an issue. He was up, really up, and then he was really down. I think that will have to be ironed out. But if he's not that guy, if he can't play 60 games and give you good goaltending... I think they're in trouble, because Curtis McElhinney does not strike me as a guy who can play consistently well as a backup. So I think that's one big thing. The other, actually, there's lots of things, but the other is their young guys. You know, how many of the young guys perform like they did last year, perform better? I think that's an open question.
And stay healthy.
So much went right for the Leafs last year with regard to injuries. That doesn't usually repeat itself. You don't usually get through a season where your most significant injury is losing Tyler Bozak for a handful of games.
Well,
Morgan Riley for a couple weeks. That doesn't happen.
The mantra of the underlying numbers community is regression to the mean. That you can go up and down, but eventually things will even out, and over a long stretch of time, things will represent what they actually are.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a big question with Freddie Anderson. If he doesn't stay, you know, because as you say, peaks and valleys. So it's kind of hard to say which guy is he, but over time, eventually he will find his place. And that place has to be really good. I think the Marlowe contract was... I'm trying to be optimistic about it because there are a lot of good things
you
about it.
You can't view that contract in a bubble. Like, you have right. to view it in the context of all the contracts that they have.
Exactly. So even though you could just say on a piece of paper, if you wrote it down, maybe that's not the way to go.
No, right.
But, you know, if he winds up playing on the third line with Kadri and that becomes like a great defensive line that has some offensive pop to it, is it worth the money? Maybe not, but maybe it's worth another round in the playoffs to them. You know, there's a lot of factors. But I want to go back to this idea of they just did not address the backup goalie situation, which mm-hmm. seems like big deal, right?
I thought that was a big mistake. I think a huge drastically mistake. Underrate that position.
100%. To me, it's like backup quarterback in the NFL. If yeah. you don't have a good one and your guy goes down and he's got to start for 4 to 5 starts, that's the difference between the playoffs and not.
It's a good comparison, except the difference is you're in football, you're playing 16 games. You have a week between games. You're playing 82. So at even like normal circumstances, your backup should play, what, 20, 25 games, 30 games, depending on how much you want to use your starter. That's like what percent? That's like a quarter of the season. And you're just going to cede that to a guy who has not demonstrated that he can give you even close to average goaltending. I just don't get that part.
Yeah, and when I was making the joke about the hipster pick, I thought you were going to pick, like, you know, Connor Brown. And you're right about Frederik Andersen. And another reason why he's the most important player is because the defense isn't great. It's not horrible, but they weren't able to really address it. They weren't going to be able to address it in any way that was going to satisfy the hardcore fan. So if you do not have this lockdown defense, then you're going to need your goaltender to overextend. And that's, yeah, so I agree with you. Why Andersen is the most important player.
But one thing I think that we sometimes do in when we're looking at teams and we're media fans, whatever, is you don't have a perfect team. Like, every team is going to have holes and flaws. It's yes. a cap system. You can only spend so much. So if Anderson's good, they've got quality goaltending. They obviously have a wealth of good forwards, and they have some holes on their defense. But that doesn't necessarily stand as an impediment to them having success, as we saw last year with Pittsburgh. Now, Toronto doesn't have Crosby and Malkin, but when you have that many good young forwards, maybe it can make up for, you know, some of the holes that they might have on defense.
So as we preview the previews of the upcoming Leafs season, so we've done goaltending briefly, but goaltending, to Matt's point, dovetails almost inevitably to the defense, because the Leafs were very good at generating opportunities and cashing in on opportunities. They were very bad at restricting opportunities. Mm-hmm. And so if the goaltending helps in that regard, that's one thing. But to your point about Pittsburgh, this is what's so fascinating about the league as it continues to cycle forward and evolve, is we've always thought of defensemen as guys who are physical, who restrict play, who limit shots. And of course you would want that. Mm-hmm. But more and more, they're becoming seen as part of the offense, beginning the offense. They're the ones who actually get it started, almost like a point guard that would take the ball only to half court and then give it to somebody else. So is it fair to say that this team is gambling on the fact that they can generate enough shots and enough chances with enough firepower that the defense doesn't have to be great? They just have to be almost like surrogate forwards that can do some defense.
Yeah, and I think one thing, you know, you look at your top two pairs, because the third pair, generally, you're not going to use them that much. We saw with Pittsburgh, they used those guys, what, 10, 12 minutes, something in that ballpark.
Yeah.
So their top two pairs, I think the fact that they've structured them differently from last year, I think is important. I think the fact that they've really late in the year changed how they used Morgan Riley. And if that works going forward and suddenly you're using him in more offensive situations and you're using a Gardner-Zaitsev pair to go against top lines, maybe that works. And suddenly maybe you've unlocked something with Riley. And I think one thing we saw late in the year is suddenly he was joining the offense more. He was on the ice with Matthews. He was making things happen offensively. He looked more comfortable that way. Maybe he's not suited to be a guy who goes against top pairings. Maybe that changes. Maybe Mike Babcock looks at Ron Hainsey and says, this guy spent last year with Brian Dumoulin in the playoffs going against top lines. Maybe that's our top pair to go against top lines. I don't know. I just think you got to focus more on the top four. And I think they probably feel like they've got three guys who can play in a top four and one who they're trying to just stuff in there and see if they can get something out of him in Hainsey.
Yeah, I mean, that's really where, you know, and you're right about the point. No team is perfect. Every team has its flaws. And the main thing the Leafs are missing, as you mentioned, backup goaltender. But beyond that is just one other top four guy. And it's not even necessarily, you know, like the Letang level, but like just that upper middle class defenseman is the one thing they're missing. The conversation with Morgan Riley always goes to development, and we haven't seen the best version of him. What do you think what does the best version of Morgan Riley look like on a nightly basis?
I don't think we know, because of how he's been used the last couple of years. And I always liked
what So how much then is it on, sorry to interrupt, how much of the best version that we could see, how much of it is on Morgan Riley and how much of it's on the coaching staff?
I think it's both. I think like they're trying to figure out, I think what Mike Babcock was trying to do, two things. I think one, you're trying to expose him to different situations so that he's killing penalties. He's going against top lines and teach him that side of the game during some seasons that didn't really matter. Give him time to develop in that respect and see if that helps him round out his game. I can't remember what my second point was going to be, but I just think like you're
the first one was so good that it doesn't even matter.
I just think you're trying to figure out what he is and where he's best suited to play. And they had 2 years where they could do that, where they could kind of mess around a little bit and not worry about, you know, how many points he had or power play stuff. And maybe now they'll figure out where he fits best. And maybe that's first power play. Maybe that's, you know, playing more with Matthews. Do you know what I mean? Like,
in a lot of ways, a coach is kind of like a director of a film.
Exactly.
In that you're casting, but you're also figuring out, like, what are the relationships that really work together? You're trying to nurture relationships. I think we think of coaches as teachers, but these guys have been taught up since they were 4 years old. Mm-hmm. It's not a lot of hockey left for them to learn. They might pick up a little thing here or there, or a trick, or a systems. But, you know, to me, like, it's the most overrated phrase in all of... Oh, Matt's got a call. Who's calling, Matty?
I don't want to stop.
It's Duffy?
No, it's Eric Karolnik. It's the producer of the morning show.
All right.
I don't know.
All righty. So systems to me is so overrated in the sense that...
I don't know about that. But I think your point is well stated in that like the coach can do a lot in terms of like what he unlocks in a player. And I think we saw, you know, one example in Toronto was Randy Carlyle. And there was this thing with Mikhail Grabowski where he was like steadfast that Mikhail Grabowski had to be his matchup guy. And maybe that was going to work if Mikhail Grabowski was embracing that, but maybe you had to look at the team and say, you know, is this the best possible use for Grabowski, who's got some skill, who can score, who can make things happen, or is he better used in a different situation? And I think what coaches can do is they can put a guy in a situation that maximizes what he does.
And sometimes coaches fall in love with players and fans don't get it. And I think Zach Hyman is probably the Leafs champ, or maybe Matt Martin is the Leafs champ for... I don't understand why this guy is being used the way he is. So
Now that gets interesting this year because they have better players. Because now suddenly...
And where do some of the guys wind up going?
Where do they fit? So if you're using Zach Hyman with Matthews this year, and you've got Patrick Marleau there, who maybe is a better fit, maybe he's not, suddenly like the puzzle pieces might not fit.
And did you pay $6 million to a Patrick Marleau to not find out how he plays with Austin Matthews?
Maybe, maybe not. But I just think last year...
I don't think you should, but...
I think last year...
But you know how management is? You spend a lot of money on a guy you want to showcase.
Yeah, but Mike
don't want to look stupid.
He doesn't care about that. And he has the power not to care about
Which
that.
Brings up an important point.
Okay. One point on that. Matt Martin's a really good example because now they have like this wealth of forwards. They have absolutely no use for Matt Martin. They are going to probably have to put... you know, Kasperi Kapanen in the minors.
Press box, right.
That doesn't make any sense. You know, you've got Nikita
Soshkov. Because he's ready to go.
Who can play in the NHL. Like, they have guys. That's why that contract still stands as kind of this weird thing that they did.
And they left him on the protected list. So they had a chance to get out of it, but they chose to keep him, indicating that he's probably part of their plans. So here is my fun question for the Leafs this year, because they were all like this good story last year. Is this the year where all the egos start to really battle? And we get to see, because Babcock thinks he's a genius, and he may well be one. But Lou thinks that he's an architect amongst the greatest architects who have ever existed. Shanahan obviously has an ego. And there's going to be pulling and warring opposing forces throughout all this. Is this the year the Leafs finally start to show wear and tear with all these egos?
But where is that going to happen, right? Like, we've seen only a couple examples of that, and I think we saw who won, and that was Babcock. We saw it with Frankie Corrado. I think he is, like, a perfect example.
Let's not bring up Frankie
Corrado. We don't have
Corrado.
To go into that much.
God almighty.
But the basic point is management went out and got this guy who obviously they thought could help their team.
Yeah.
And the coach absolutely refused to play him.
Mm-hmm.
That's a power move.
Yep.
So I think we know who is in charge. I just don't know where those pressure points come because they seem to sort of be on the same page, maybe not in certain places, but maybe it's a contract. I don't know.
Is Matt Martin going to be the most contentious non-factor this year in terms of a storyline? Like every time he gets more than 6 or 7 minutes, that's going to be a big story on a player that big picture means nothing for this team.
I don't think it'll be so much about how much he plays. It's who he plays over. Like if Kasperi Kapanen is on the team and not playing and sitting in the press box, that is a red flag. That should not be happening because there's no.
What does
way
that flag tell you? What is that? If
it tells you that they're valuing quote unquote leadership and experience more than quality players, because like you can't make any argument that Matt Martin should be playing on this team. He's just not good enough.
I guess my counter to that is, do you ever get nervous or uncomfortable when you question the cliches, question leadership? Because
absolutely,
from us on our end, and this is like, I think the analytics, it seeped into my brain as well. Sometimes I will do the scoffing. Leadership, character, Bacha, Martin doesn't belong. Kapanen should be on the ice. But do you concede that maybe there's things we don't know? That maybe this leadership thing is more important than... Is leadership sometimes more important than talent?
I don't think so. I think the most talented teams usually win. I just think, look at it like this. Have you guys ever...
Which is my point about systems, actually, is that in the end, if you don't have the talent, there's no system that can make you a winner.
But we've seen a coach can make a big difference in how much a team's win. But
like, Mike Sullivan's a good example of that, of how he gets his teams to retrieve pucks. And
right, and suddenly got them playing a speed game. But have you guys ever played like roto anything, like roto basketball, football?
You mean like fantasy?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, well,
I leave my fantasies to a strictly different realm.
It doesn't matter. But the point is, there are all these categories. And the way you look at it, or I look at it, is you're going to be at certain height in certain categories. Like, you might be really good on average, but you might be really bad in homers. You might be really good in RBIs, but you might not be that great in saves. And so I look at all these things and like trying to measure how much they matter. So how much does leadership matter on this invisible thing of chips that you have? And I just can't see that the difference that you get in leadership from Matt Martin makes up for the talent disparity between him and someone like Kasperi Kapanen. There's no world in which he is offering so much in terms of leadership that it outweighs how much better a player Kapanen is.
So here's my analogy. Think of the Monopoly board. Leadership is like when you have hotels on Virginia and St. Charles Place and States Avenue.
Exactly.
It's not a bad thing to have. It's good, but it's not the biggest thing. I want to point out, by the way, guys, we suck. We suck because we've done like 15 minutes of a Leafs preview. We haven't talked about Austin Matthews, William Nylander, Mitch Marner yet. Like, we have hipstered out, and it may be my fault. I apologize. Yep, Matt's pointing. It is totally my fault. So let's go. Do you want to do Matthews, Marner, or Nylander first?
Any of the above.
All right. So who is more likely this year to have built on last season, Marner or Nylander?
That's a good question.
By the way, when you say good question, is that code for I don't have an immediate answer, so I'm going to stall for 4 seconds by saying that's a great question?
No, I didn't think of it that way. I'd lean towards Nylander based on what we saw in the second half. But one thing I think we forget with those two players, there's a big benefit to playing with Matthews. And Marner didn't play with Matthews at all.
Yeah, he was the veteran whisperer.
And I sort of wonder what would happen if they flipped.
Yeah.
And like, if you put Marner with Matthews, and what would happen to his production, to his opportunities, like how much would that open up for Marner? He dragged that line along for a good portion of the year with Van Riemsdyk and Bozak. Those are good players, but he was kind of the straw that stirred the drink. I don't know. Like, Nylander, I think we saw something in Nylander in the second half where like there was a confidence that was there. He can shoot the puck. I think like if there's one big difference between those two guys, his shot's
better.
It's substantially better. And like his connection with Matthews on the power play is lethal because they stand on opposite sides, and like, how do you defend that?
Yeah.
So I lean towards Nylander, but the one thing with Nylander is, you know, he has this reputation, you know, over the years. He comes from like pedigree with his dad and everything. Will he want to push it? You know, and we've seen Babcock question this. Or will he kind of get complacent? That's one thing I don't know with William Nylander. I don't know how much he pushes himself. I guess we'll see that. Maybe that's unfair. Like, maybe we don't know that about Marner either. Maybe we don't know that about Matthews. But like, there is a reputation there, whether fair or not, that I'm curious about.
There's always a question of how fair it is. But here's something about reputations. They don't usually come out of nowhere. There's always something.
Right.
It's like, for instance, everyone knows that, it's a quote from Adam Carolla, everyone knows that Henry Winkler's a good guy. And why? Just because of his reputation, because everyone always says it. Everyone always says that. So there must be some truth to it. Much like no one likes Jeremy Piven. Enough people say they don't like him, so obviously it must be true. Let me attack that question a little bit differently. Who do you think is going to be more important for the Maple Leafs next year, Nylander or Marner?
Again, I think it depends on who plays with Matthews.
So because it's all real estate. Location, location, location.
Well, because
ever located with Matthews.
Well, because that line's going to go. Like, whoever plays with Matthews, that line's going to be fine. It's whoever doesn't play with Matthews... You know, can that other guy drag another line along and make it potent offensively?
So I got to run. Hang on. So we've been sharing two mics here. So Matt, just tuck in with me. We're going to do Bruce Springsteen and Little Steven because we're sharing a mic here.
Live Aid reference from 1985. The kids will love it.
So no, people know who Little Steven and Bruce is. People still know, I think. So I got to run because Matt was super late this morning and we're taping this extra podcast because he's on his way to New Zealand. So I'm going to leave you guys with a question, then I got to go. And then we'll be back together on Monday after you come back, right? Okay. Should Nylander play center?
Ooh, that is a good final way. By the way, Bob, give your out.
Oh, yeah.
Great question. Bye, Bob. Should Nylander play center? It's a great question. And by the way, Jonas is very...
I'm just pulling up one of my documents.
All right, you pull up your document, and I'm just going to describe to people that Jonas had a very, I'm going to go with pained expression on his face, and Bob almost left without his computer, and now for the second time, goodbye, Bob.
Okay, so let's go to the question, since I have my depth chart up.
Yeah.
Should he play center this year? No, because they don't need him to play center this year. I think it's beyond that where the question starts to become legitimate because Tyler Bozak's UFA, Dominic Moore's UFA, that doesn't matter so much. But next year, the year after this one, suddenly there is a hole at center. And if you plug Nylander in as your second or third line center, it doesn't really matter how you want to pair it, whatever. Suddenly you've got Matthews 1, Kadri 2, Nylander 3. Suddenly you could have three really good lines. But again, that depends on like how some of these other young guys develop. You know, how does Kasperi Kapanen develop? How does Andreas Janssen develop? If they can fill in the edges around Matthews and Kadri, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like suddenly they can make that move. I think eventually that's going to happen. I just don't think it's this year.
Not a lot of teenagers score 40 goals.
Almost none.
Not a lot of teenage centers score 40 goals. Mm-hmm. This might be a silly question. Did we underrate the season Austin Matthews had last year?
Sure. Yeah. Like I thought last year, like I could not write enough about how historic it was that what he was doing, because I think people grasp like this guy was doing things Toronto hasn't seen, the league hasn't seen very often, but historically, like there were so many bars he crossed that you just don't see, like the teenage 40 goal rookie thing. It's like a couple handfuls in NHL history. It never happens. And the fact that he was able to score that much and do most of it at even strength, like he led the league with, I think, 32 even strength goals.
Mm-hmm.
That's something. And if you want to look at the difference between, you know, Laine and Matthews, I think Laine had a few less at even strength and a few more on the power play and some empty netters. Like Matthews did damage as the number one guy, like as being the number one point of principle for teams to attack.
And in more of a defensive era of hockey.
Yes. So I think for sure it's underrated a bit. Should you expect 40 goals this year? Probably not. Like I would, if I was wagering, I'd probably guess him 30 to 35. Maybe the shooting percentage drops off a bit. And I think it'll be interesting to see how he handles that. You know, he had that 13 game drought early last year where he didn't score. And there were all these questions and some of it's like way over the top.
Of course it is.
But now there's like real pressure on this team. Now people expect them to be good. People expect them not just to make the playoffs, maybe win a round or two.
It's one of the great things, great questions about the Leafs is not necessarily what X's and O's or who's going to be on what line and all that, is how do you handle this? Because mentally, in a lot of ways, it's a lot easier going into a year when no one expects a lot out of you. You can be just more comfortable within yourself. But this year's going to be so different. I mean, the expectations, rightfully so, are going to be high, and they're going to be probably higher than maybe they should be because it's happening here in Toronto.
I don't think that's true. I don't think it's crazy to suggest that they're a team that can contend for a cup now. Like, I don't think that's absurd. I don't think...
Remember, do you know why that's considered crazy? Look at the geography. Look where you are. In Toronto, the idea of having nice things... But it's not something this city, when it comes to hockey, is used to. I'm not talking about what logically makes sense when you look at the team's upward trajectory or the talent level they have. I'm just talking about the psyche of this city does not, it's hard to
embrace.
Just like the same way we talked about how maybe Austin Matthews, we underrated how good he is. We're not great at processing success in Toronto.
Well, because there's this idea in Canada and Toronto for people who aren't Leaf fans or whatever, don't like the team, that they're automatically overrated. That anybody who plays for the Leafs, like, automatically blown out of proportion how good they are. And that's been true for a long time. Like, yes. A lot of these guys who were built up to be really great players or just good players or just average players. But I think with this team, it's different because this is legitimate. Like, they legitimately have some of the best players, best young players in hockey. That matters. And, like, you can win despite your age. There's this idea that, like, you have to have all this experience to win. Crosby won his first cup when he was 21, I think. He was in his fourth year. Taves was 20. Like, you can be really young and be the best player on your team and have the potential to win. And when you have as much talent as they do, it's not crazy. And there's not, like, a team you look at in the NHL. And even if there was, there's not a team you look at and say, that's the team to beat. Like, I'm not betting on Pittsburgh to win three straight cups.
No, of course not.
So, like, the East, who's the best team in the East? It's probably Pittsburgh. But who else? Why can't Toronto be right there? I don't know.
Yeah, oh, absolutely they can. It's exciting. It's great. This is the most exciting year for any Leaf fan probably ever. Like, literally ever. I mean, unless...
I don't know about that. They unless won a lot of cups back in the day.
I was about to say, unless you remember watching hockey in 1968, this is probably... I mean, at the very least since 94, since the peak of that very brief period of the Gilmore years. A week ago, because when people listen to this, it's...
Wait, I have to renew my parking. Hang on.
Okay. Right now, by the way, technology is fantastic. And by the way, Jonas, we really appreciate you sticking around and doing this. Jonas right now is working on his Apple phone. Apparently, you can renew by using an app technology.
Have you never done this?
Hopefully I have a BlackBerry. Do you think I've done this? No, I've not done that. I don't have... Oh, my God, that was fast. I thought I was going to have to vamp for way longer than what I did.
Toronto parking app, get it.
Yeah, that's... all right, getting back to it. A week ago, Austin Matthews had to miss the NHL, NHLPA. There's some sort of event going on in New York, some sort of media event. And Austin Matthews couldn't go. He was sick. The Leafs doctor said he had the flu. So that got everyone thinking, oh, that's just Lou Lamoriello trying to keep away Austin Matthews. But this, I am wondering, and again, a lot of jokes about Lou Lamoriello and just this Svengali, you know, controlling everything. How much are the Maple Leafs management going to play defense on Bettman and the NHL trying to make Austin Matthews a star?
Well, two things. The NHL doesn't do a great job of selling
their stars.
They do a
horrible job. But think of what they have. They got good-looking teenager, super good, from an area that is not known for hockey in terms of, like, if I was Gary Bettman, I would be treating Austin Matthews, and I would say two middle fingers to the culture of hockey where it's about team versus the individual, and say, we are going to use you as a battering ram to try to help grow the game.
Okay, so then why all of last year when this 19-year-old teenager from Arizona is having a historic season, is the team allowed to shelter him like they did? Why is that allowed to happen? Like, if I was running the league, I would make a call and say, there are rules. You are breaking them. And I don't even know if there is a rule for this, actually. I don't think there is a rule. I think they just made up their own rule that rookies aren't going to talk because it's what Lamoriello did in Jersey and it's what he does. And who's going to tell him to stop?
Yeah.
But I would say we are not, that's not happening. Like, we are not doing that. That's not allowed.
Yeah. Oh, I've
but it doesn't happen. The league is not good on pushing back on this kind of stuff. It lets it happen. It happens during the Stanley Cup final. Like, the two teams are supposed to practice in the same place to like maximize media coverage. They don't. There's like a really, I don't know how big the fine is, but there's like a fine that teams just take and the league doesn't do anything about it. The NBA, it's not a choice. Like, you are in the same venue. Anyway, like, I'm getting off topic, but the point is...
No, that's actually right on topic.
I don't think the league is going to stand up to them. And I'm really, really curious to see if that culture thing where they didn't let rookies talk, and it's not the biggest deal, but it matters somewhat. If that happens again this year, and then how the market reacts, how the league reacts, because it's stupid.
Let me throw another group here. You know who should complain about this? The union. Because the union should say to Lamoriello and Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, Austin Matthews is going to be available for everything. Because if he can make the NHL a little more popular and help ratings a little bit here and there, guess what? It's going to make more money for you, the owners, and it'll make more money for players.
These availabilities don't make that much of a difference. Like, they're in between period interviews, their post-game interviews. He still does stuff. I just think they've really restricted. He never does radio interviews. Did you ever once hear him on the radio last year doing an interview? Maybe once at the end, maybe right when he was drafted. But other than that, they don't get him.
Mackwitz and I interviewed him when he was playing in Switzerland.
Right.
That's the last time. But I think that Austin Matthews could be the most important player for the entire NHL if the league completely deconstructed the way they handle the media, the way they handle celebrity, the way they handle marketing. And Austin Matthews could be, he could be the poster child. He could be the guy that brings in the casual hockey fan in the United States.
But it goes against the culture of hockey. Like you said, just ignore that. That's not the way hockey is. Hockey's not basketball. And it isn't for good reasons. Like you need 20 guys. Like it's not like you can have LeBron James. Like Sidney Crosby is the best player in the game, or Connor McDavid is, whoever you want to say. If you just have Sidney Crosby and a bunch of like average to slightly above average players, you're not going to win.
Nope.
Whereas LeBron can take a crap team with Mo Williams and Anderson Varejao
and get to the finals.
That doesn't happen. So you can't build it up as much like it's LeBron against Kevin Durant. They've tried a little bit, but I just think the culture of hockey goes against it. And guys like in hockey don't like to be singled out that way. They don't like to be the main attraction. Like
it's actually a great thing. It's actually a great thing for Lamoriello and management, because if you put in another sport, and like just think about it, you have an American market that is very small amount is into the NHL. So there's a huge untapped potential. And then you've got a guy who could become the face of USA Hockey, who is a good-looking guy who's really good at his job. Mm-hmm. In so many other scenarios, any marketer would look at Austin Matthews and go, get me that. That is the holy grail of marketing, except in hockey. The NHL.
But you know what's weird? I had that flashpoint. I was covering the All-Star game in LA last year, and I saw this. I was coming back from some event. I don't remember what it was. And I was staying in the hotel, the NHL hotel. And in the lobby, I see like this big crowd hovered around somebody. And I'm like, well, like, is there like some celebrity here? Like the NHL gets like the B-list celebrities, but not like the top guys.
Dennis Leary.
It's like Alyssa
Dennis
Milano
Leary and Will Arnett. That's right. The top
so, like,
level.
It's like B-stars. And I look and there's like a security guard and there's all these fans. And I see a guy in a suit, slick back hair, and it's Matthews. And he looked like he was not a hockey player. He looked like he was an actor, like who was just being swarmed by fans. I saw that like two other times. I'm like, holy, can I swear on here?
Okay, I just got to
holy see. Shit.
Yeah.
This, like, there is a potential here that they may not be maximizing. Like, Connor McDavid doesn't have that star factor. Like, he just doesn't care. He doesn't have that aura about him. And there that's like, sort of looks, that's personality. Like he doesn't look like a movie star. Yeah. Right. Like this guy looks like a movie star. And so there's something there that I think you're right that they could max out on. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you do that, but I think it's there. I just don't think it's going
to
happen.
And I don't think Lamoriello, and if Bettman and them wanted to, Lamoriello and Shanahan and Babcock are going to do everything to say no.
But if you were a powerful central office, it's not a question. You don't have a choice.
You know, see what other guy, there's one other guy, and there is more than one other, but the other one that comes to mind when I think about just a celebrity is PK Subban. And the moment I realized it was a year ago, he was at the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal. And you know what he looked like? He looked comfortable. He had the mic. And he was telling jokes, but he had the cadence, he had the timing, and he just looked at home in that setting. And I remember watching that thinking, man, this is, again, it's just all this potential that is there. But the NA, it's like, you know what it's like? It's like you've got this huge vat of oil in your ground. The ground is filled with oil, and the NHL doesn't have a drill. Nor do they even want to find a drill.
But to play devil's advocate and take their side,
sure.
Which I'm not on that
side.
No,
but I like opposing views.
How do you do it? Like, I don't know how you do it. And obviously, maybe there are like marketing people you can get and publicists and stuff like that. I just don't know what do you do to market like that?
A couple ideas.
I don't know.
One, you start getting him on a brand, some sort of truck, Coca-Cola, whatever. Find a way to get commercials with him. Then after that, you know what you reach out for? Good Morning America. You reach out for the morning shows, the Regis shows, the Kathy Lees, you know, before when it was Strahan and, on those shows. And you get him there because you know what you want to find? Don't worry about sports fan. Go find casual. and you get some, and you get started there, sure. and then well, you get at- a different, and then you get a different audience. Then you know what you do? You get them on some fun ESPN commercials. They do brilliant commercials. Mm-hmm. You know, you start with, so you get them on the sports brands, you get them on the non-sports brands, you put them on the morning shows, you get him on The View.
Those are good ideas.
You know, and
you look
start
what happened
there.
With Steph Curry. Like all of a sudden, Steph Curry became the most popular player in the league. Like, you can debate with LeBron, but like he rose up.
Yep.
And so maybe you analyze like how that happened, like what they did and you know, how he became this guy.
You know what advantage Steph Curry has? It's easier for the common person to relate to Steph Curry than LeBron because LeBron is just so much more bigger, so much more physical. And when you look at like LeBron or like the top, you know, the biggest players in the NBA or the NFL, they don't look like the average person. They don't look like 5'8 guy. But you take Austin Matthews out of the skates, out of the equipment, and you can still tell, okay, this guy's an athlete. But it's more like, and a lot of Olympians look more like, except for Phelps, he's just a weirdo looking guy, but they look like more like us. And you know what that means? Relatability. And Austin Matthews could be so much more relatable, but we're not going to see it. And that's fine. It's fine. It's just, it is what it is.
I'm not convinced it's super easy. Like, I'm not even convinced all those ideas do it.
Oh, no, but that starts it.
But that's, maybe that starts it.
That
but
starts
in
it.
The end. It doesn't really matter. Like, it doesn't matter.
And that could be part of it. It could be the fact that they... And I would never ever think that the NHL could get at the level of the other sports. They can't. It's fine. They're doing well. They're making millions. Everyone's making money. But there is a higher level they could go to. And there is still potential there, and they're not. Jonas, before I was going to say we, but now I let you go. I wanted to talk a little bit about you.
Oh, boy.
If you want to and lie on the couch, we'll talk about your relationship with your father. Your motivating factor, and by the time people listen to this, I'm sure you've already spoken about it, because this is being going to be released a week later. It's September 7th right now, so it'll be around the 14th. Your decision to go to The Athletic. I love The Athletic. I subscribe to it within the first couple of weeks, because in my job, The Athletic is great because it is content. And that's all anyone who works in media is. It's all about devouring content to, you know, to broadcast to other people. I'm curious about your decision, because you went from... You were at TSN, traditional media. You then went to CP, woo, another traditional media. Now you've gone to The Athletic. I'm curious about the genesis of that.
Well, it's complicated. Like, it's a hard choice. It was hard to leave CP. This is actually the first time I've actually talked about it with anybody, but like really, really close. Like
now,
my girlfriend,
you could talk as much as you want or as little as you want.
Sure. I just thought the opportunity with a team like this that's on the rise, that's really interesting, the opportunity to do really, really in-depth, interesting stuff, deep dives into what's going on, was too alluring to pass up. They seem to be a company that's on the rise, that has a new way of doing things that I think can work. I know I subscribe to all these different things. Like, I pay for Netflix, I pay for Crave TV, I buy a New York Times. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm willing to pay for good stuff.
Yes.
And I think if I and people there can do deep stuff and good stuff that's interesting to read that I would pay to read, I think it can work. Like, there are people I would pay to read. I do, like, I would pay to read Zach Lowe for his NBA coverage.
Yep.
So I'm hoping, like, I can really go in depth on this team on stuff that you just can't do with a national wire service, because there just isn't the space, there isn't the time.
Deadlines.
There's deadlines. There's word counts. Like, yes. You can only do so much in 700 words. So if I want to do a really deep dive on something, like, why is Patrick Marleau playing with Kadri? Or, you know what I mean? Like, I can do that and I can go really deep into it. And so I think there's an opportunity there to do different stuff as opposed to the way it's traditionally been done.
How much did you hate doing game recaps?
Not a fan. But it's impossible. Like, what do you, so you have these, all these places that want a story right when the game is done, right?
Yep.
So you need to service that medium, but they're not good because, like, you're writing it as the game is happening. Mm-hmm. As we know, most hockey games are one goal games, so the results change. They're just not good. There's no way you can do it well because
of
time
constraints. And most of the quotes aren't that good. Like, let's face it, in scrums, most players, coaches, it's a lot of cliches. I mean,
it is and it's not.
Come on.
Stupid questions get stupid answers.
No. Even smart.
But a lot of that is like you don't have time. Like, you know how literal time there is. Like, when I would file a story at the buzzer, I literally have an hour to produce something else. How much can you do in an hour? It takes 20 minutes to go in the room, talk to the players, talk to the coach. So now you're down to 40 minutes. Then you got to transcribe. So that cuts it off to 10 or 30 you have left. Suddenly you have 30 minutes to like write something else about the game. There's just not much you can do there. So with The Athletic, I won't be under that constraint. I'll be able to, I'm not going to do game recaps, but I can take some more time and figure out something different to do. So
The Athletic is, so, to me, it's so important for everyone getting into, like, we'll just stick with sports media, because there's only so many jobs. I've always felt, I've never taken any of my jobs for granted. I was a producer on Off the Record for 7 years. I did work for Sun TV on air and producing. I've been doing stuff for radio on an almost permanent basis since TSN Radio started up. I never took it for granted, because there is a small amount of jobs and there's a ton of people that want to work in this industry because it's fun. You know, every job's got its good and bad, but this job is fun. And if The Athletic works, and if that model works, what it'll just mean is, A, it'll show that there is a market for it and there's an appetite for it, and it'll mean more work for people.
It's, well, because someone else, like, I don't even know if I can acknowledge this. I can imagine someone else starting something similar, like, yeah, if it works, and saying, like, there's a reason that all of a sudden after Netflix, there was Crave TV and there was Show Me. Like, suddenly they're like, hey, shit, people will pay for stuff that they want to watch. Maybe we can do that. And so maybe if more and more people in this generation who, like, the younger generation reads, I think the statistic shows that they're more likely to consume their news from reading it somewhere, whether it's Twitter, whether it's online. Maybe there's an opportunity that creates a new industry. Like, who knew that any of these platforms that exist now were going to exist? Like, who knew that there was going to be something called Twitter? Who knew that, you know, that Apple Music was going to exist, that suddenly you were going to be able to have all the music you want anytime you want it? We just don't know where it's going. Like, you talk to people who are trying to come up in this industry, you probably do it too, and they're like, well, it doesn't look good. Like, the industry is shrinking. And the way I choose to look at it is, like, it's changing and it's trying to figure itself out. And that is often messy and crappy for people in the middle of it. But eventually it transitions into something else. We just don't know what it is.
Of course. And by not knowing, I think the reason why people say, oh, the industry is dead or dying, well, that comes from fear. And fear comes from, because
fear of unknown.
That's exactly what I was going to say. When you're in a transition, that is chaos. That is the unknown. And that's kind of where we are right now. You know, I was an early adopter with Twitter and podcasts, but there's a lot of other things.
Me too.
You know, where I was just, you know, been very late to. And we don't know. And in some ways you can look at it and go, that's exciting. You know, but I also say this, the traditional media will always be around. I always love the storylines of, it's going to die out. No, it's not. It's always going to be here. It itself will, you know,
it'll be different forms.
It'll change as well, but the base will always still be there. I think the key is there's room for both. Like, I go to TSN.ca, I go to ESPN, I buy newspapers, I buy The Star and The Sun, and also something like The Athletic. If you've got good content, I go there, and I think more people will as well. And I'm glad you're part. I'm glad you're part of The Athletic. It's always, like, you need different voices. I do like the gas bag. I like over-emotional. I like knee-jerk reaction. Hell, I'll say something dangerous. I even like people like the Jason Whitlocks, the Colin Cowards, even the often very unpopular Clay Travis, because I like different opinions. And even if I don't agree with the opinions, I'm always curious to see, how did they get there? I want to see every reflection. I don't want to live in a bubble. So I like living in a world where there is a Myrtle and a Siegel, and then there's a world for more gas bag columnists.
I don't think The Athletic will have lots of that.
Nope.
But I see what you're saying. Like, you want different types of opinions. I'm not going to do these deep statistical dives like Tyler Dello can, because I can't do that. That's not like my skill set. But hopefully I can tell good stories, in-depth stories, obviously using stats and using research, and you know what I mean? Like, everybody can contribute something else. And it's no different than like a hockey team. Like, I'm not a 40 goal scorer, but you know, you can do something else. And I think, like, even for anybody coming up in media, I just think you just try to find what you're good at and do it well. And hopefully, you know, the market and the landscape changes where there's fits for more people. So
do you think The Athletic will have a place for a gas bag? Cause I can bring you some hot takes. Like, for instance, if the NHL wants to start to compete with the NBA, you know, what's the first thing they got to do? They got to tell all the players to be selfish. No more than 3-year contracts. Because right now the whole conversation is, When's Tavares going to sign his 8-year deal with the cruddy Islanders? Not where's Nylander, or where's Tavares going to go? So to the NHLPA, they need to tell their players, F loyalty and conservative nature. It's time for you guys to be selfish, and it's time for you to screw over one fan base, because big picture, that will help the whole league.
Yeah, but the league would want shorter contracts, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like, I agree, it should be. I don't know how we got into shorter contracts. Where are you taking us?
So I'm taking it because the NBA, everyone signs 3-year deals, and you don't know where Paul George is going to end up.
That's because the max is you can sign someone is 5 years for your own player, and it's 4 years for another player.
Hey, Connor McDavid screwed.
Because the NBA Players Association was just a gong show.
Yep.
So
Connor McDavid hates every NHL player with a contract he signed. How's that for a hot take?
I don't know how to react to that.
Jonas, I really appreciate you you joining Bob and I.
Of course. Glad to be here.
All the best to you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.